from WILL's Illinois Newsroom. This is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. It's Tuesday, January 4th. Coming up, COVID-19 outbreaks at meatpacking plants in 2020 exposed many vulnerabilities in this workforce. We hear the second story in a three-part series from Side Effects Public Media coming up in just a few minutes. But first, these headlines. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker says he's deeply concerned by the record number of COVID-19 patients in the state's hospitals, and he thinks the problem may only get worse.
I fear the climb will continue as the virus incubates in those who were exposed at the end of December.
State officials say there are now more people hospitalized by the coronavirus than at any stage of the pandemic. Pritzker says hospital workers are working as hard as possible.
They are under tremendous strain, and I don't know how much more they can withstand.
The governor says 85% of COVID-19 patients in hospitals are not vaccinated. Public health officials reported more than 250 new COVID-19 cases in Champaign County yesterday. The number of active cases fell slightly to more than 4,900, still near an all-time high. The number of Champaign County residents hospitalized remained steady at 44, which is also an all-time high. Carl Hospital in Urbana, which serves several counties, reports 154 people hospitalized with COVID-19. That's also the highest number they've reported during the pandemic. 26 of those patients are in the ICU. Those walking around Urbana are more likely to get hit by a car than pedestrians in Champaign, Chicago, or Boston, according to a local activist group. Illinois Newsroom's Emily Hayes has more.
Cars zoomed on Lincoln Avenue in Urbana, on the edge of the University of Illinois campus. Between 2013 and 2017, cars hit 10 people walking down this mile of road. One of them died. Audrey Ishii is a member of the Urbana Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Commission. The group wants to bring the 1 to 2 pedestrians killed every year in car crashes down to 0.
Because of the small size of Urbana, these rates translate into a very unacceptable per capita rate compared to especially Vision Zero cities like Seattle, Chicago, Boston.
The city of Urbana also aims to become an official Vision Zero city. More than 40 cities across the U.S. are part of the Vision Zero program, which requires cities to set clear goals for eliminating traffic fatalities. Ishii says the last two steps in this process may happen by May. I'm Emily Hayes, Illinois Newsroom.
The Illinois men's basketball team resumes play tonight at Minnesota. The Illini last played December 22nd in their annual rivalry game versus Missouri in St. Louis. Most of the Illinois players tested positive for COVID-19 upon returning to campus after Christmas. Head coach Brad Underwood says the entire team is fully vaccinated and they continue to take precautions both at home and on the road.
We're definitely all masked up in our building. We're very conscientious of how we travel and wearing masks and understanding we're getting on airplanes, we're getting in buses. What you do at home can't just be at home. We're still exposed to things on the road as well.
The Illini's home game last week versus Florida A&M was canceled, and the game at Minnesota was delayed 2 days for Illinois players to be released from isolation. Tonight's game tips off at 6 p.m. and will be televised on Fox Sports 1. Still to come, we'll hear the second story in a three-part series on COVID outbreaks at meatpacking plants. That story from Side Effects Public Media's Natalie Krebs is next on 217 Today.
Food is at the center of our lives here in Illinois. All of us eat it, many of us grow it, some of us might be struggling to afford it. I'm Dana Cronin, Illinois Newsroom's agriculture reporter. I'm working to tell the stories that affect us all, from the food supply chain to food insecurity. Listen for my reports on AM 580 and FM 90.9, and look for my stories online at illinoisnewsroom.org.
This is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. Immigrants make up an estimated 40% of the U.S. meat processing workforce. Last year's wave of COVID outbreaks at meatpacking plants revealed how protections are lacking for many of these workers. Side Effects Public Media's Natalie Krebs explains.
Amner Martinez still doesn't really know all the details from when his 74-year-old father, Concepcion, got really sick with COVID near the start of the pandemic.
Tengo una pregunta.
He calls him from his office in downtown Des Moines, Iowa, to ask,
¿cuánto tiempo le dieron libre?
How long was he out of work for?
Una semana.
Sí.
1 week.
Martinez's father has worked at a Tyson's food plant in central Iowa for more than 2 decades. It was the site of an outbreak early in the pandemic that affected more than 700 workers. Martinez says his father, who he calls a workaholic like himself, didn't tell him just how sick he was until he was recovering.
He said that he was like on his knees, basically talking to God.
Martinez says the Tyson job has done a lot for his family. They're originally from Guatemala. The job brought them to Iowa from California in the 90s.
In 1995 in California, my parents were making $4.25 an hour.
Martinez says in Iowa, his parents' wages doubled. Martinez also worked for Tyson and now runs his own staffing agency. His clients include some meatpacking companies. Martinez tells clients he knows how hard the job is, but
I also know the opportunity that has provided my entire family to just move out of poverty, really.
It's only in the past few decades that immigrants like the Martinez family have made up a significant percentage of meatpacking workers. Dave Swenson is an economist at Iowa State University. He says the workforce shift started in the 1960s, when an Iowa beef packing plant developed a more efficient way of processing meat. Swenson says it upended the nation's industry and unions, and also made the job more dangerous.
Pay went down that much. The kind of work that people were doing was repetitive, led to injuries. The line speeds were fast.
Swenson says the old, mostly white and black workforce started quitting. Companies initially struggled to find workers to replace them.
They found they were able to be attractive to and retain workers who were foreign-born, primarily those who were refugees from Asia and or people who were coming up from Mexico and Central America.
Fast forward to 2020, and those immigrant workers and their families suffered as the virus swept through meat plants. Caroline Johnson is the clinical director for Proteus, a nonprofit that's launching a pilot health clinic in a central Iowa meatpacking plant. It's an effort to remove barriers to healthcare, like lack of access to health insurance, transportation, and language barriers.
And unfortunately, they have so many health disparities and are at greater risk for diabetes, hypertension, and cholesterol.
These are conditions that also put them at a higher risk of getting severe COVID. Tyson Foods launched a similar initiative and opened 7 pilot health clinics across the country. But these programs cover a small fraction of the nation's meatpacking workers. Claudia Corwin, an occupational medicine specialist with the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, says the pandemic showed where government public health programs fell short.
Very, very few states have actual protections for vulnerable food system workers in the event of public health emergencies like the COVID pandemic.
Funding for public health has been dwindling for years. Some states like Iowa cut state-level initiatives aimed at minority health in the years leading up to the pandemic. So workers have suffered. An Iowa State survey found the pandemic took a mental, physical, and financial toll on workers in the state's rural meatpacking towns. But many said they're afraid to speak up about health and safety concerns for fear of retaliation. I'm Natalie Krebs, Side Effects Public Media.
Join us tomorrow for the final story in Side Effects' 3-part series on the pandemic's impact on meatpacking workers. This project was funded by USC's Center for Health Journalism. And finally, in your forecast, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard says it will be partly cloudy and blustery today with a high of 39 degrees. That's all for today. 217 Today is produced by Farrah Anderson. Reporting today contributed by Dan Mialopoulos, Emily Hayes, Rob McCauley, and Natalie Krebs. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Brian Moline. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.